Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Newtown Theatre. Please welcome a man who has just had another opportunity to assassinate a major political figure. Let's find out if he did it. It's Richard Herring! Woohoo! Thank you very much! Hello, Edinburgh! It's good to be back. Feels like I was just here yesterday. Bang! Yeah, I was here. Was here yesterday. So welcome to Richard Herring's Lighting Scottish Tartan podcast. It's new direction for the podcast. You've got to keep it fresh. There's so many podcasts now, aren't there? So what, every day I'm just going to choose a different Scottish tartan and set fire to it. And I'm going to carry on doing that until Scotland agrees just to become part of England, as it should be. All right? We want our Stunniskin back! I'm starting with the Agnew Ancient. And see if any of the Agnew clan will be upset with. Not really, but I was hanging out with Nika Burns and all the people who worked at the Edinburgh Fringe in the 80s and 90s for nothing and have managed to get brilliant jobs in theatre and the media, and expect people today to be able to do the same without realising there are literally 100 times more people up here and fewer jobs. And they all call it Rellastupper. That was a little bit of satire there. It's a little bit of satire. Following the Fringe news. I was just backstage in my dressing room, and John McDonnell, the leader of the Labour Party, was the English Labour Party. He was in my dressing room just hanging out like he owned the place. He looks quite wily, I reckon. I didn't have any weapons with me, but I've had an opportunity to kill. I could have killed Michael Gove several times, actually. I could have killed Nigel Farage. I was on a dark corridor at midnight behind Nigel Farage, no one else around. And I could have killed John McDonnell. If I'd taken all of them out, I mean, it would have been pretty good to escape the first two undetected. So who's killing all these politicians? Don't kill politicians. It's only a joke. If anyone listening at home, and if you do kill politicians, don't blame my podcast. We don't need that kind of. Oh, no, the mic's cut off because John McDonnell's. Is it still working or is it just my ears? There, we're back. Oh, don't fucking mock John McDonnell. It's all the union, the electricians' union there. Let's all just talk it out, folks. That's the message of my bit of satire there. I would never be violent, mainly because they could punch me quickly back. Yesterday I was discussing the value of my penis. There was a news story about a man who went in for a bladder operation and had his penis circumcised instead. I mean, it wasn't a choice by him, it was an accident. But he got £20,000 in compensation. So I was trying to work out how much the whole thing would be worth, because I don't really use mine much more. And it's in, with Brexit coming up, it'd be nice to have that little nest egg to fall back on. But I think I might have to just take my cock to the Antiques Roadshow, which has to be a certain age, doesn't it, to be an antique. But I think it would qualify. Just flop it out in front of Arthur Negus. It's been a while since I've watched the Antiques Roadshow. See what he'll give me for it. The one thing I regret about dying, which will happen to me at one point, is that my penis will cease to exist. I was looking at it the other day thinking, that should survive beyond. It's a wonderful, I've got a really nice one, that's what I'm saying. And it should survive beyond. I'm actually less upset about dying myself than the fact my penis has to go at the same time. Although I did go to the Icelandic Penis Museum, and a man has donated his penis to that, so I might donate my penis after to you, Liam. That might be the price for coming to every... Oh, God, that was the wrong thing to say. I'm very excited by the news about indestructible water bears on the moon. Don't know if you saw that. That's worth checking out on the BBC News site. There's indestructible water bears on the moon now. An Israeli rocket crashed with some little mites on it, and they're up in the moon, and they can't be destroyed, so they're there. It's very exciting. Liam gave my wife, who's in a fantastic show called Drunk Women Solving Crime, some crunchy nuggets in a bag last night, and instructed that she had to eat them in front of me because he knows that I am not eating chocolate this year. And he's the person who likes this show the most. That's where we've got to. So coming up this week on the podcast, if you want to come again, there's not a bad turnout for the for Black Wednesday, the first Wednesday of the first week. So thank you for everyone who came. Tomorrow we've got John Robbins, and talking of Iceland, we've got Snjólaug Ludvigsdóttir. And we'll find out how close I've come to saying that correctly tomorrow, who is an Icelandic comedian. We're at an international festival, and I've heard fantastic stuff about her. And then later in the week, Spencer Jones and Janie Godley and Ashley Story are all coming together. There's Tony Slattery on Sunday, which should be very entertaining. And we have Jem Brister on Saturday. So do come along. Also, people like Richard Osman, all sorts of people coming on later. So if you're at home listening and you're going to come up to Edinburgh, please come along. If you're at home listening to all these podcasts and not coming to the festival, why not join the Rahalastapa? Thank you. That's very low key there for a way. I mean, I know it's the first Wednesday, but fucking put an effort in. go to gofaststripe.com/badges and you can join in with that. We'll talk a little bit more about stuff like that in between the two guests. My first guest today has literally just arrived. It was very exciting. She's best known for being the makeup artist on Hunky Wonder. That's why we're here today. And she was also the still photographer on that as well. You may not know that. That's something she keeps secret. She's a woman of many talents. Will you please welcome Jade Adams, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome. Come in. Thank you so much. Coming along. Sit down, pick up a microphone so you can be heard.
Hi.
You know how it works.
Yes, hello.
Comedy business. How are you doing? Are you okay?
I'm very well. I think I very much suit this chair that you've got me sat in.
I think we've got it especially for you. You've come in sort of royal robes, and sort of orange robe.
What I really like, the fact that this is one of the biggest chairs I've sit in, it's still snug.
Well, mine will get snugger as the fringe progresses if my intake of Häagen-Dazs is anything to go by. Other ice creams are available. They're not sponsoring me. I don't know why I'm giving them the time of day. You're a makeup artist as well, or was this just...
I can't believe that you've brought that up.
I know. Well, I find out everything about my guests.
My mate Dave Bussell, he did some like filming, or he got some like funding for some short films. And then he put a message out on Facebook. This was about in like 2011 when I was trying to be a stand-up. Yeah. And he put a message out. And I'll be honest with you, I wanted to be in it. But he put a message out looking for a makeup artist. I looked down, I was like, I got some makeup. And then I just rocked up and did some makeup. And then I was a... So there was one episode where he took photographs of the whole thing, and it was done like in a sort of, you know, photographic way. Like the story followed whilst it was like... And I just took the photographs with an SLR that my dad had got me for finally graduating, because I took a little bit longer than everyone else. So they bought me like a sort of like a, just a Nikon. And then I started... taking photographs of comedians and charging them for it against my really grotty back wall in my kitchen in Mitcham. It's a very depressing time of my life. Thanks for bringing it up, Richard.
Very excited to hear all about this. Imagine that being your only IMDb credit, though. It's good you've got some other stuff in there now.
It was for a long time, those two things.
But multi-talented. People go, hey, we need a makeup artist and a photographer. But there's one person who can do both those things on the whole of IMDb. So, I mean, you're having a fantastic year already. I've done very well at pre-selecting the people who are going to be big hits at the Fringe.
Oh, well, that's very nice of you.
You're having a fantastic time, I imagine.
Yes, it's going very well. I have decided this year to take myself out of my comfort zone. My comfort zone is singing opera and wearing big costumes and big hair and being quite showbiz. I did a huge show last year called The Divine Miss Jade, and I joke on stage that at this stage of my career, it was probably a little bit too big for me. And I spent a lot of money on it. I made £42,000 worth of ticket sales and came home with minus £3,500. And you'd think it's because Edinburgh is expensive. It wasn't. It's because I had a 6x4 wind sequin sign, and the man who wrote Jerry Springer the Opera, or one of the men that did, on the piano. And he's quite expensive because gays know their worth.
Didn't know Stuart Lee was gay, did you? Well, there he is.
Big one.
Please find out. So this year, it's, you've become more. Well, you're wearing a turtleneck. Are you being serious? Is that?
Yeah.
Is that,
yeah.
So I. But you're not. You're. It's sort of slightly pastiching the idea.
Yeah. It's this idea that women in 2019, unless they're sat on thrones on stage talking about issues, wearing black turtlenecks, they're not really doing. There's like a sort of a thing where women are very serious at the moment, quite rightly so, because of all the things that have come out and all the bad men that were taken down. But I'm, you know, this isn't an accent that's lend itself to being serious. They don't put us in positions of authority, do they? Unless you are in a West Country police station, and then they can't help it. I sort of I've never done that, really. I've always been the class clown and made everyone laugh. When I used to dance with my sister when I was younger, we did a lot of... I was very disruptive, just trying to make people laugh. And now, in fact, taking myself out of my comfort zone is me talking about things I care about. And I'm a working class girl, and I thought, you know, that's not often a voice in the middle in the feminist conversation. Yeah. So I thought I would have my own feminist show whilst wearing a black turtleneck and talking about the big issues of life. But it turns out that I have actually made a point with it as well.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
And you're not going to leave behind like being the clowning. And because it's great to be funny, you know what I mean? I hate it when comedians genuinely think, if I'm not being serious, then I'm not doing my job. Because the opposite is sort of true as well, isn't it?
I really love entertaining people. That's what I love to do. And there's a sort of there's an element to Edinburgh is its own thing. So you create an Edinburgh-ish show in order to get people, and then it helps you for the rest of the year. You all know that it's a trade fair up here for all of us, don't you? And there's a way to do Edinburgh. And I've sort of done. I did a show about my sister who died in 2016, which I got nominated for Best Newcomer for. And what the audience can't see me doing is. Trying to be humble on stage when I say that. But I wrote that show, which is your sort of archetypal show about a traumatic experience that you've had. And then this one was sort of, I was like, people are doing sort of serious issues. Maybe I can make light of a topic, perhaps, you know, in a serious, funny way.
Yeah.
And it seems to have worked, but I won't be. I'll be back in the sequins immediately. It was just for this show, because I want to always make people. I don't want people to guess what I'm going to do. I like the fact that people will never be able to second guess me. And I hate it when people. My least favorite thing that someone. someone can say to me is, "Oh, that's what you're like, Jade." I'm like, "No, well, no, I'm not now. That's over now."
Yeah.
I really love it when I you know, surprising people's the funnest.
Yeah. Well, it's great, and I think with comedy, there's so many different places to go with comedy, and so many different ways of doing it. That's it. I agree that like a lot of people just find their place and just stick in it. And it's and could do a great job, and that's a great way of becoming like very good at that one thing. But there's so many different types of comedy to try and master. You know, it seems a shame not to push yourself, which you seem to be doing, which is good. And you are from Bristol.
Yes.
You're born in Bristol in 1984, which means there's a possibility when I was up from Cheddar for a Saturday afternoon, I might have passed you in the street when you were a baby, and I was, 17.
Where were you in Bristol?
Well, just mainly in the shopping centre.
Which one?
The main one in the centre, but it's all changed now.
Broadmead?
Yeah, Broadmead.
She's in.
I mean, you know, your mum's in. I might be your dad, if only. I mean, to be honest, I didn't have sex till I was nearly 20, so I think you're safe.
Yeah, a 17-year-old father in Bristol isn't a long stretch, to be perfectly honest with you.
Even for me, that's how bad I was. That's how unlikely I was to have sex, even in Bristol.
You should have been from Bristol. Anyone can get laid there.
But I love Bristol. It's a fantastic city, and it's always my favourite place. Sorry, Edinburgh. You're in the top 500. it's my favourite place to play. Is you must have fantastic gigs back in Bristol when you go back there.
Yeah, now. Yeah. Not when I first moved away.
Oh, really?
I remember the only gig that my brother's actually come to, he's an electrician, and he doesn't come to watch me. And the reason is, as I said to him, "Why don't you come and watch me do gigs?" And he says, "You don't watch me do electrics." But he came once in 2012, and I died for the first 12 minutes of a 20-minute set because I tried something new, which is, and now he won't come back.
Right.
So yes, now it's really nice because it's sort of like, you know, Bristol, as soon as you start being successful and you move away from somewhere, everyone gets on board. And they're all very proud. And, you know, I've got a show, actually, the show that I'm doing at the moment, I'm touring, it's the first tour I've ever done. And on, I think it's May 21st, I'm doing the Bristol Old Vic.
Yes, lovely venue.
Which is, for me, this is a huge deal because I would stand outside of the Bristol Old Vic, you know, hoping that I would be there one day. And I went to the youth theatre thing for a little while and did a couple of plays in the small back room that they have, not the main room, and then, you know, sneak into the main room and look at it and go, "Oh my God, isn't it fancy?" So it's a huge deal. And whenever I did Colston Hall as well, and that was in their not the main room, but that was another one of those sort of things. And that's how I measure my success. I don't measure it on the telly stuff. I measure it on whether or not I can. How close am I to the Bristol Hippodrome? Because that was when I was younger, and I went to see Phantom of the Opera 10 times, and I got obsessed with the man who was playing Phantom. There's something about you know, a character who, like, you know, is a little bit traumatic. That's women want to save everyone. And I got obsessed with going to Phantom, and it was, you know, that venue is the one, and Bristol Vic's the second, and then Bristol Hippodrome's the first one.
Yeah,
I wouldn't feel the Hippodrome at the moment.
No, you could go and be in the pantomime at the Bristol Hippodrome. That's all I mainly remember about the Bristol. There's a pantomime.
Have you been there? Have you done?
I haven't played the Hippodrome.
No.
The Old Vic. I'm at the Old Vic in September, doing Rahulastapa. No, they're not doing it. They're picking up. They're warming up. Though it's nearly sold out, that one, because Bristol's great. I do well in Bristol, Edinburgh. Just to let you know. Just to let you know today. And you worked in Asda on the fish counter, is that right?
I was there for the shortest amount of time ever. I was there for 6 months. When I was 16, it was my first job. My mum was already, she worked there from the age of when I was 2. Mum got a job there. And I got sacked for eating a prawn wonton off of the deli counter. And I worked on fish.
Yeah.
So that was real bad. But they sort of made an example of me, because everyone was cooking up stuff out back. Like, all the girls were cooking up pizzas. There's a hot plate that you sort of, when you wrapped everything in cling film, you put it on top of the hot plate and it would, like, seal it. That thing turned into a pizza oven with two tin foil trays that acted as an incubator.
Oh, yeah.
And then I was used as an example. Mum, you agree? She's so sad. She hates that when I do that.
I'm not sure your mum's even here. You've asked her 2 questions. Has your mum gone over to the other side now? Mum, do you agree? Are you... Yeah. She said yes. She said she agrees. We all heard it. Well, so you can. But 6 months is quite. My first job was 3 weeks picking mushrooms at Axbridge Mushroom Farm. Some of them might have ended up in Asda and Bristol, and I was terrible at it. People were very good at picking mushrooms, and I was not good at picking
mushrooms.
What
do you have to do to be good at picking
mushrooms?
Well,
I mean, I think there was people who'd been there for a long time, and they would bagsy the best beds.
What mushrooms are we talking about?
They're like button mushrooms mainly, yeah. But there was a few bigger ones. It just depended on how the crops had grown. That it's all inside.
Were any funky mushrooms?
I didn't see. I wouldn't have known when I was that age. I went to Bristol within my first £30 a week I made doing that, and I bought a Sony Walkman. Just a date when I was first having a in job. Yeah, and that was somewhere in I want to say Broadmoor, but Broadmead.
Broadmead. Yeah. Not Broadmoor.
But it's all been knocked down, all that stuff now, and rebuilt, hasn't it?
Yeah, they've got Cabot Circus. Yeah, there's a new bit down the road. But Broadmead's still there, but it's tragic. It's everything's slowly moving over to the other side.
Yeah.
But, you know, BHS is still there, standing strong.
That's good. Well, I must go back while it's still there. There was a Wimpy there that probably isn't there anymore.
Debenhams is still there.
Is it? Okay.
It's hanging on by a thread, mate.
It's, you know, this isn't interesting for you, but there's some people in Bristol creaming their pants now at this.
I know that place. Oh, this podcast is the best I've ever listened to.
Do you ever travel down to Cheddar when you were in Bristol?
Yeah, I've been to Cheddar before. Yeah. Been to the Caves.
Yeah.
Add some cheese.
Yeah, there's some cheese there. Have you been to Wookie Hole in
been
Wales?
Been to Wookie Hole
Caves. Which do you prefer, Wookie Hole or Cheddar Caves?
I've been...
Be careful how you answer this. Think carefully.
Well, I like witches.
Yeah.
And, yeah, sorry. I was a kid. If I had a mascot, I was there.
Yeah. We got a rock that looks like a lion if you squinted it.
I mean, I would now, I'm of an age where I would now probably more enjoy Cheddar Caves.
Yeah, I think you should, yeah.
Yeah, I need to go back.
You need to go back. I'll take you back. We'll go and have a look around again. Wookie Hole is better, but that's not the point. That is not the point. There's lots of things to talk to you about. You've had a very interesting life. You were an Adele impersonator, and so this one of your first TV things was... You walked out of, is this right, about this Adele?
Well, I got a message. It was when I'd very first signed with my first agent, and I couldn't get hold of them over the weekend because, you know, they're not constant support. And I was at the Wimbledon Theatre because a friend of mine on the drag circuit, because that's how I started performing in doing stand-up. Because I tried to get into stand-up, it's quite closed and a bit clicky sometimes. So I just went to the drag queens, who immediately accepted a strong, powerful woman. They love them. So I went to them, and you know, and one of them phoned me. Actually, loads of them did. And they said, "Oh, the BBC are looking for drag impersonators because they've been asking around the drag circuit as well. Why don't you go and do it?" And I did. And I arrive at the Wimbledon Theatre. There's a load of girls in the foyer, and we all look alike. And I've never felt so ununique in my entire life. "Oh, babes, what do you do?" "I'm on the cruise ships, mate." And so we all sit down, and then we go up to the dressing room. They put us down, and I start, because I've done a little bit of telly, not loads. If you'd have seen me in the room, I'm acting like I'm on everything. But I just felt uncomfortable. They had a BBC T-shirt on, so I sort of trusted them.
You can just make those yourself. You have to watch out.
Well, this is one of my thoughts was this could be some sort of hidden camera thing, and I couldn't get hold of anyone because it wasn't through my agency that I had it, so I didn't know if I'd done the right thing.
Yeah. Could be a very specific white slavery for someone who really likes a load of Adele lookalikes. Really? Could be sold into...
I do think it's a Pornhub search. Yeah. I'm not... So I'm sat with all these girls, and there's a woman at the end, and she's telling them too much, and I kept going, "Shh, don't say too much." I was really uncomfortable there, and they were really. And I was like, "What is this show?" And they were like, "Oh, it's a show about impersonators. This week we're doing Adele, then we're doing Boy George, and we're doing Rihanna." And that was what they said it was.
Yeah.
And after a while, I said, "I got to leave. I had all the makeup on and everything, and they were desperate for me to stay because I think I looked the most like her out of all of them. But they pulled a drag queen out who was like 6'4", slim and mad black hair. Anything'll do. So they really wanted me to stay, and they sent the woman up. They said she was the ethics specialist of the BBC who happened to be at the Wimbledon Theatre on a Sunday afternoon in a pair of gold hot pants. And she stood outside the room and tried to convince me to stay, and she said, look, and I, because basically they'd given me a form and it said, I, Jade Adams, sign away my moral rights. And I was like, I do not sign away my moral rights. My mother told me when I moved to London two things: don't get naked and don't sign away anything. Trust your instinct. So I left, and I felt really proud of myself that I didn't, because it's one of those moments that you hear about when you're a kid about signing your soul to the devil and in this job. And I said no, and I got in a cab, and I was really proud of myself, and I told the cab driver the whole story, and the BBC paid for the cab ride from Wimbledon to East London where I was living. It was great. And then about 3 weeks later, a mother phones me up and she says, have you watched the television? And told me about this show where Adele was pretending to be an impersonator and hiding herself amongst other Adele impersonators at the Wimbledon Theatre. And in fact, what I thought was a show where I was going to get, it was like a hidden camera show, was actually an opportunity for me to meet Adele. Not only meet Adele, but sing with Adele and be part of a YouTube video that got 49 million hits or something like that. And where was I? In the back of a cab, writing a Facebook update that got 26 likes.
Oh, well, you know, you don't need Adele. You're better than Adele, right?
I don't. I do need her. Can she get in touch? Thanks.
You do. She probably would have become your best friend.
She wouldn't
be. Because probably what she wants is someone who looks quite like her and makes a living looking like her. She'd probably want to become friends with that person.
I'd be uncomfortable with her being in my life as well. Yeah. I like being unique. I don't need a load of people like me around me. Yeah. I need it all different. So yeah. No. Well, we can appreciate from afar.
I think so.
Like me and Dawn French do. No. Yeah. No, I adore her.
Well, Dawn French called you the third funniest woman in the world.
Fact.
Yeah. Who were the first two, though? Did she?
Her and Jennifer.
Was it? Yeah, that's amazing. That's what I want.
I went to her house.
Did you?
Yeah, we went.
Did she invite you? Or did you just
yeah.
I'm not going to be let down after the Adele thing. I'm going to meet them all.
Well, her agent and my agent work across an office from each other. Right. And her agent, Maureen, had sent her videos of me. And then I was still working at a cafe at the time, and I was covered in pig juice. Bacon had tipped on me, and I was walking across the road to get some bread, and I'd been getting this phone call, and I was sure I owed someone money, so I was ignoring it, and it was one of those no caller ID things. And then finally, because it was going on and on, I picked it up and went, what? And she was like, oh hi, it's Dawn French. And I recognised her voice immediately, and I was like really? And she went, yeah, it's Dawn French. And then I sort of realised that what the connection.
Yeah.
And she was being so nice to me on the phone. She said, I've watched your stuff, I think you're brilliant, why don't you come and see my show? So I went to watch her show, 2 million minutes or something. Yeah. Like it was brilliant. And the Vaudeville Theatre, it was great. And then she invited me to come backstage. Oh man. And I'm there, and I'm sat there, I'm working in a cafe still, but I'm in the backstage, and just Dawn French and Imelda Staunton are chatting about life, and it's me there too. And they're talking about having difficult daughters, and then I remind them, this is what happens to a difficult daughter, it'll all be fine. And it was very surreal. And then she said to me, she was like, if you ever happen to be in Cornwall, why don't you come and pop on by? Well, funnily enough, I had a holiday in Cornwall that magically just appeared. My boyfriend, who's also a comedian, Rich Wilson, he's slightly older than me. He's been obsessed with Dawn French since the young ones. Right. And he's like been, like, he likes big women. God rest him, love him. I call him Fat Man. He defends us as well. That's another story. He likes big women, and he's always adored her, like fancied her. And he came with me, drove me there, and we're pulling up to her house, and his heart's going. And I'm like, you're gonna just have to calm down, mate. And he got to the door, and I'd already met her, so she was like, and she gave him a hug, and she went, can I have a hug to him? And he was like, yes. And she was great. She's like the loveliest woman. She talks, she tells you everything, and we opened the door and she said, do you want to have a nose around? And she was, and I was like, yes. And she went, because she said, I love looking around people's houses, and frankly, I've spent a lot of money on this place and I want to show it off. And she took me around the house, and then there was a room. She opened the door and she went, this is your room. And I was like, and we tried to leave because we didn't want to impose or be there for too long. And we had like tea and cake, and we met her wonderful husband, Mark,
yes.
Who, like, I don't know if you know the story, but Mark had no idea who Dawn was when they met. Like, he had no idea. He doesn't watch telly, so he had no idea what he, now obviously he knows who she is now, but but they're really sweet and really in love, yeah, and it was sort of, you know, my chap and I are in the first throes of our relationship, so it was really warming to be in the presence of this couple who just absolutely adore each other, and she's just, as you imagine, she's the loveliest woman.
Yeah, she is. Well, yeah, I've met her on this. That's, yeah. I've met her a few times. She's
been really supportive as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I like that. You know, that's not always the case with people from the older generation comedians. I really try to sabotage everyone's career. It doesn't seem to be working. I get them on here in order to be funnier than them, and then they trick me by being funnier than me, and then they do well. It's not fair. It hasn't worked out well. I'm going to ask you some emergency questions because people will be upset if I don't. Oh, my goodness, this has passed by so quickly. You must come on again, Jade.
Okay, I'd love to.
Because we've barely scratched the surface. Let's see what we've got here. Well, this is what's come up. What's the most unusual thing you've ever rented?
What is the most unusual thing I've ever rented?
I don't know where that came from.
I mean, I've had some pretty questionable Airbnbs.
Yeah.
I've had an Airbnb when I had to lift the mattress for some. I'd lost something, and I looked everywhere in the room, and I lift the mattress, and it had a huge blood stain. It was massive, right across the. And that was pretty bad. I still gave them a good review, though.
At least they flipped it. At least they flipped it when they killed the previous. I mean, you're not in charge. If an Airbnb and someone comes and uses it to murder someone, it's not your fault, is it? And the mattress has two sides. You don't want to throw the mattress out.
I don't really rate people badly on anything.
No.
The only people I did was when I was forced into reviewing a potato masher I bought off Amazon that I haven't even used yet. And I got a message every day about reviewing this potato masher, and I got so mad I went onto Twitter and I got angry at them, and then I started getting bullied by James Acaster and Ed Gamble, and then they started up this hashtag called Jade Bangamash, which is related to another one about Phil Banger Wangamash or whatever it is, and then I started getting picked on by them all, and then I turn up to a gig where I'm doing it's a Wi-Fi Worlds gig where you play computer games in front of an audience. Ed Gamble's opposite me, and then during the match he takes his top off, he's got a t-shirt on that says Jade Bangamash on it. They were trying to force me into reviewing the potato masher, and I'll be honest with you, I'll tell you about this potato masher. It was a fold away potato masher. You couldn't mash anything with it because it folded itself away every time you did.
Yeah, it's very hard to find a potato masher, I think, that does the job. I don't know how people get that very smooth mashed potato. I don't know how they do it. Mine's always got lumps in it.
A ricer.
Yeah.
There you are. A ricer.
Ricer.
Yeah, potato ricer. Oh. You basically mash it up a bit and then you feed it through the ricer and it makes the. That's what chefs do.
Okay.
I've been to posh restaurants.
Okay. Well, I'll give it a go. But yeah. You know, I'm not convinced. I've a friend on Facebook who has an Airbnb, and they came back from one people who's been there, and there were condom wrappers in the toaster. You kind of think, that's a very specific. You couldn't, you know, you're not going to just fling those across the room. Anyway, we'll do one more emergency question, and then we may have to bid you adieu, unfortunately, but we will have you back another time because you are fantastic. My wife is speaking very highly. You've done my wife's podcast.
I did.
Well,
I absolutely adore your wife.
She's all right, isn't she? If you want to take her and the youngest kid off my hands, then you are welcome. I'll have the oldest one.
I'm very good with other people's children,
are you
actually.
Good?
Yeah, I'm really
just
good.
Come around any time and babysit you want to. Let's ask you, would you rather have a handmaid out of ham
A hand.
A hand that's made out of ham, or an armpit that dispenses sun cream. So you get enough sun cream for your own personal use throughout the year. You won't be able to market it. I mean, you could do a bottle a year, maybe. Or a hand that's made out of ham, you can just eat the hand, it will grow back. But if you eat the whole thing, it'll take a while to grow back. But if you nibble at it, you've got free ham.
I'm a bit funny about cannibalism. Oh, yeah. Call me old-fashioned, but I'm not into it at all. Like, if it's ever on a movie or something, I get... it makes me feel really weird. Like, I get a weird feeling about it.
I mean, is that cannibalism? If you bit your fingernails, would that be cannibalism?
If it wasn't ham, if it was pork crackling that came out...
So close, isn't it?
And it was slightly warm and it had applesauce on it... Yeah. If that kept growing out of my hand, then you would have me, but the ham thing would bother me.
I reckon you could do that with your hand anyway.
Well, just cover it in
I think you'd have to put it in a fire, but I think it would become pork crackling if you did. I mean, we are just pig, sort of monkey
pigs. We've
got
a similar taste to pigs, so yeah. I've read in...
I think if you stuck that in an oven for long enough, the skin would come up as crackling, you could eat it. I mean, you know, if you really want that, is what I'm saying. I'll give you the applesauce if you do it for free.
I feel that if I responded to this, it would be an irresponsible use of my platform, Richard.
Okay.
What was the other question?
An armpit that dispenses sun cream, free sun.
See, I'm fair. That's great. See, and I'm no one ever believes this, but I've got things growing out. I don't shave always. My parents hate this, but I have a hairy armpit, so growing things out of my armpits don't bother me. So actually, what would be more useful is to have sun cream, because sometimes I am caught outside. Yeah. Only if it was Neil's yard, though.
Okay, I think you can pick the.
If it was constant Neil's yard sun cream, I'd be well up for that.
Wow.
Yeah.
No one's ever gone for a brand before. you know a lot about sun cream. We're going to have to leave it there. Tell us where you're on. I think you might be sold out, are you? But if you're
no, not, I'm
you're
not sold out. It's not selling well, but it's not sold out. I'm at Pleasance 2 at 9:30 p.m. and the show is called The Ballad of Kylie Jenner's Old Face. And if any of you have switched off at the name of Kylie Jenner, don't worry. I've made a show for you. But it's someone said to me. Describe your show in 5 words, and it's basically fourth wave feminism by Jade. That's basically the show.
Okay, well, it was a fantastic comedian. Please go and see this show, ladies and gentlemen. Jade Adams, thank you very much. Thank you. Right, I'll drop my book down there. I need that. Oh, I'm all over the place. We've only been going a week, and there. Look, if you here in the theatre would like to buy your own emergency question book, I will be at the... they've set up a little table for me in the doorway as you go out of the venue. You know, I'm not proud. And you can buy the new emergency questions book at a knockdown price, because there's a new version coming out and I'm trying to shift my remaining stock. And the old emergency questions book, which is 500 questions, if you buy them both, you get some free stickers. And there are some stickers. You can buy the stickers as well. I'm one of the cool kids. I'm one of the cool kids. Stickers. And you also got a programme at the beginning. That's a free gift from me to you. As always, I make a collection for Scope, which is a fantastic charity that is trying to get equal rights and access for all disabled people. So if you want to donate some money at the end of the show for that charity, there will be a bucket on my table and maybe someone holding a bucket as you're going out. Please donate whatever you want to give. You don't have to give anything. It'd be lovely if you do, though. It's going to a fantastic cause. So let's crack on with our next guest. I have a card machine as well if you want to pay by for me, not for the charity. Let's not get things out of perspective. So
when you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Let's remember who's the most important one here. So, my guest this week, you're much better than last week's audience, I've got confused, is probably best known for his hit song Orange, which made number 30 in the Irish charts. I'm sure you've all got a copy. Will you please welcome David O'Doherty, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome. Come in, sit down.
Hey, everyone.
It's David O'Doherty.
I listen to this podcast, so I'll probably be listening to it tomorrow.
Yes.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
Probably walking through the meadows as well.
Yeah.
And then there'll be an embarrassing thing if someone sees what I'm listening to, because the blurb will have, they'd have to know who I was.
Yeah.
And then it'd be like he's listening to his own album. It's like Paul McCartney listening to a Beatles album. I know, actually, that makes us the Beatles.
Yeah.
Forget about that. Yeah, it's too much.
Let's do that. Let's both walk around listening to it together until someone stops us and we can go, oh, would you like us to act a bit out for you?
Because you're implying this is all scripted, then we've had to learn off this script.
I'll send you a script to learn overnight, and then we'll walk around together.
Great.
So just keep it simple. There's a story behind the hit song Orange, isn't there? It's not. Actually, number 30 was as high as it could possibly get, more or less.
No, we were going for number 27.
Oh, okay.
In the pre-download era, the charts were quite easy to rig in January and February.
Right.
Do you remember metal bands like Iron Maiden would be number one in February?
Yeah.
I think the thinking was that on the way up to Christmas, everyone buys Christmas albums, and then in January, people spend the tokens they got for Christmas. But in February, not a sinner buys a record. So more obscure, Sepultura would be in the top 10 or whatever. Yeah. And Ireland is an even smaller market. And at the time, so this is 2008, just before downloads were a big thing. Mm. All you had to do was know someone who worked for the chart tracker company and find out what record shops were counting in an individual week, because only certain record stores would be the ones.
Right.
And so my friend and I found three in a triangular shape, and you have to buy each one 15 minutes apart, but the loop took about 30 minutes, so the two of us just went round. And because our friends worked in all the record shops, they knew what the scam was.
Right.
And so we bought like 900 copies of Orange with a view to getting it to 27, and it got to 30.
Yeah, 30's not bad, though, is it? It's still a top 30.
Yeah, it's unique among songs in the top 30. It never got any radio play.
There were some swears in it. There was some swearing.
There was some rudies in it. And I think they played 15 seconds of it. You know, new entry, number 30. And just a little bit with no rudies in it.
But you can see it now on YouTube.
Yes, we made a video
as
well. Fun fact. The man who directed that video was John Carney, who he won the Oscar for best. He made a movie called Once that some people may remember, set in Dublin, a beautiful movie that won the Oscar for best song. And so that's a Glenn Hansard, Marketa Erdlova duet. But when you IMDb'd him, it would be like the two videos he'd ever made were the video for the Oscar-winning song and this absolute heap of shite as well. So it has an extraordinary number of hits.
I don't think that's fair. I think it's a very good video.
Thank you very much.
I enjoyed it very much.
It's about, it's not a political song.
No.
Even though it's called Orange, it's about someone who wears too much fake tan
in
2008. Yep.
Yeah, and works in a photocopy shop. It's nice. And you've been up to. Yeah, the thing is, Dave, when I do this show, I mean, I know you're a very successful comedian, But you do so. You've done so many interesting and fascinating things in your career.
Stop.
And you know, it is. It's, you realise how I just realise how much talent there is out there.
Go on.
And then I kind of understand why I'm not doing that well. There are really good comedians out there.
I'm doing okay.
No,
there's hundreds of people in a Masonic hall in the middle of the day.
There's hundreds. You've done some really interesting stuff. When that song. The hit thing was from a show called The Modest Adventures of
David O'Doherty. Yeah. So tried to set out. It was. They gave me a show. I don't really know why. They must have had some money left over, and they gave us so little money to make 6 half-hour episodes in 2008 for late night Irish television. And so in one of them, I tried to cycle 200 miles and do a gig at the end of it that ended really, really badly. In another one, we tried to make a short film in 24 hours and enter it into a short film contest. Just those sort of. I lived in a bedsit at the time and recorded a live DVD. Remember, people were doing DVDs a lot at that time.
Yeah.
They were getting like offered big deals for the DVDs to record them in the Albert Hall or whatever. So I decided to record it in my bedsit. And yeah, we fitted 38 people in. There was a man sitting on the loo with the door of the loo open. And it was the album was called Giggle Me Timbers or Jokes Ahoy, because we couldn't decide the title, and I'm dressed as a pirate on the front.
But so there was lots of fun things with that. Those are crazy stunts. You've written kids' books.
Yeah, I've been doing that longer than I've been doing. I mean, there is a wave of comedians writing kids' books now, but I had my first kids' book when I was 20, just after university. And so I've been doing kids' gigs longer than I've been doing grown-ups' gigs then. And it was probably the confidence I got from doing kids' gigs, which are probably more petrifying in many ways, doing readings, you know? That then gave me the confidence to do this. I have many great heckles from the kids stuff, but the best recent one, a 6-year-old girl said, "What is the point of you?" Which is I think that Socrates died not being able to work that out.
It is. I think I had a similar one. I did a gig just before coming up to Edinburgh at the Deer Shed Festival, and a kid asked something very much like that to me as well. It is interesting how kids will come up with these massive philosophical conundrums. And I guess they're thinking about, they're trying to work out the point of everything.
They are, and I think probably because their experience of grown-ups is teachers or their parents, but it's generally about life lessons, and this is an important thing.
Yes.
And then I am telling them the danger of sharks coming up out of the loo and grabbing them from below and dragging them in. And then if you reach up and you pull the flush by mistake, you both spiral off into a local river. And after about 10 minutes of looking perplexed at this, big questions start to come into their heads. Everything I knew is now wrong.
Oh, good fun. You won the Comedy Award in 2008 here. Now, have you done a show in Edinburgh every year since 2002? 2000?
No, I did 2000, and I skipped 2001.
Yeah.
And then I did 2002 to when I was quite heartbroken in 2017. I skipped that one.
Right.
And then I've done the last two then. So,
yeah, so you've done a lot of one-man shows. I mean, that might be... That's almost the record, I thought.
It's only consecutively it was from 2002 to 2016.
Yeah.
And then some years, I did... The year I won the Perrier, I was doing 3 shows a day.
Right.
I was doing a kids' show. It's probably the show that I'm proudest of. It was just so stupid and so much fun. Me and Maeve Higgins, who some people may know, lives in New York now, amazing comedian, does podcasts. She and I were in 2 beds on stage. And we were trying to get to sleep. And the audience came in, and kids and grown-ups, and instinctively saw people in 2 beds. And the kids would just be like, shh, to the grown-ups. And they'd all take their seats. And then we would ask them how to get to sleep, what like their tricks, and whatever they suggested we would do for an hour. And the best part of that was after I won that award, your nighttime shows sell out. They're very hard to get tickets for, but people just see your name and be like, ah, that's the fella we want to see. And the last, because the Scottish schools that go back earlier, so that it was more and more grown-ups were appearing at our kids' show.
Yeah.
And on the very last day, there were two, do you know those sort of large, I'd say, perfectly square Edinburgh residents, fellas, midday, I'd say, do you know those fellas who could be between early 30s to mid 60s? Those guys holding the three pints in a triangle each, they come in and sit down thinking, oh, here's this show everyone's talking about. And me and Maeve asked them how to get to sleep for an hour. They got into it. It's fine.
Kids shows is difficult, isn't it? I'm mainly going to kids shows. I just went to see today. I saw Mr. Men and the Little Miss show. It's very childish. I couldn't hold my attention.
Did they? Well, around the 40-minute mark, you found your mind just waning. And
actually, there need to be more songs in it. That's my advice. The Mr. Roger Hargreaves, if he's listening.
I don't think he is.
He may not have had anything to do with this live stage show.
So what, could you just take me through? So the Mr. Men are famous for a thing.
Yes.
You know what I mean? There isn't a curveball Mr. Man where he's like Mr. Strong, but it turns out he's emotionally strong. Do you know what I mean? It's just he lifts heavy things.
Yeah.
Mr. Sneeze.
Someone bought them all for my daughter, so I've read all of the Mr. Men books.
Oh, bragging. Here we go.
I've read them all this year. It's 48 or something like that.
From my recollection, I liked... Who's Mr. Dizzy, is it? He's shaped like a figure of eight. Now, that's most of them. And he's ditzy. Oh, I tell you, the joke at the end of it, and this is just going from having not read it for over 40 years... He ties an elephant's trunk up at the end.
Yeah.
And the punchline is, I debose do dig dat's fuddy. And I remember thinking, this is good. This is.
They are good, but there's an element with them, I feel, where they're trying to tell kids not to be a. So there's Little Miss Chatterbox. You feel like the message is, girls should shut up. I mean, the message is you should listen.
And to Mr. Chatterbox, here he comes, here now. He can explain a few things to you, darling.
But unsurprisingly, I suppose that. But they had a whole cast of characters.
Are they real people?
There are real people holding puppets. Wasn't enough that my daughter liked it. My son was, who has watched some things and enjoyed it, but he is not two yet.
Yeah,
he did not hold his attention. Songs, you need to put songs in for the 2 years.
I saw an intriguing one because I'm living with Josie Long, who has a 1-year-old, and so we were looking in the brochure, and there's one called Double Bubble Trouble.
Okay,
which I can imagine what that is. I doubt it's about us all living in bubbles in the modern world and the difficulty that gets you into. But no, it says Double Bubble Trouble is running every day, and then one of the gigs is listed as adults only.
Right.
And I really want to know what happens. They really cut loose with the firing bubbles out of their arseholes or something.
They should do a Mr. Men version for adults only as well. Just all the Mr. Men and the Little Misses fucking each other.
Jesus
Be great.
Christ.
Mr. Strong. Go and take that Little Miss Chatterbox. That'll show you up.
I always struggled with Mr. Messi in particular. Yeah. Not the footballer. Because the other Mr. Men all have structural integrity. As in, I don't know what breed they are. They look sort of... They're mammals or lizards. Maybe the... What do you call the furry things that lay eggs? Like the platypus. What's the name of that subset? No, not marsupials. The ones... What are they? Monotremes. Yeah. They're the only... Yeah, so do the Mr. Men lay eggs? Is there one where... Is it like a Mr. Breakfast? Hang on one moment. I'll just get the wife.
I reckon they're cloacid. I reckon they have cloacas, the Mr. Men.
So Mr. Messy.
Yeah.
The others, you can imagine, you can see... You get like pancreas, kidneys, probably. Although they don't seem to excrete either. Yeah. But Mr. Messy... is just an abstract form. He's just someone's done a squiggle and put legs on it. And that annoyed me a lot, you know. But then I guess if there was a war situation, you'd push Mr. Messi to the front line because the bullets would go through, you know. It'd be like Terminator.
I object to is Mr. Snowman, because I don't think that should be allowed into... There's a Mr. Snow.
Yeah.
And he's just a snowman.
He's on cocaine.
Well, he's not okay, but he's a snowman. That's not part of the Mr. Man universe,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah, not at all, no.
I don't know if that became before or after the Raymond Briggs snowman.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
also, does,
cashing in.
Does only so many adjectives, so many words that can be Mr.
Well, there's Mr. Silly and there's Mr. Funny, and they're sort of the same thing.
Yeah.
Just so one of them's got a hat on.
They're running out there, so they're going to need some new words they to be are. Invented in recent times then. You know, Mr. What's a... Well, let's try and think of a new...
Mr. Me Too?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, Mr. Me Too could be... That'll sell well.
Well, we didn't come here just to talk about the Mr. Men, but, you know, we can. We can. We can.
Mr. Methane.
Mr. Methane.
Mr. Methane was not one of the Mr. Men.
He wasn't.
He was. He used to fart tunes.
Yeah.
Would you have seen him?
I was on with him. Yeah, I was on with him. He was still going in the 2000s. I think he might have been going since then.
And what would he? Would his tunes be decipherable? Would you? Could you do? Was
well,
it like
I mean,
name
yeah,
a tune?
He wouldn't. I think if they hadn't been decipherable, he would have been. He'd have been booed off, wouldn't he? People. Were, he's a man who he could suck air into his anus. That's how he did it. He could suck air in.
I thought
and then he yeah. No, and then he farted out. So they were actually odorless farts, I believe.
Would you have to use presumably you'd have to use the same mic after him though.
I did do a gig with him. I did a gig with him, and I was really ill the next day. But I don't know if it was. I don't think it was connected.
The one that I from my first ever Edinburgh in 1999, where I defeated Josie Long in the Channel 4 New Comedy Awards. That she beat me the same year in the BBC Comedy Awards. Okay. So it's a running feud we've had for 20 years now. I recall, and I still don't know if this was a fever dream, but I went to Leighton Live. And there was a lady on a swing who was peeing in a bucket. And as the swing moved, she could adjust the strength of the pee. So most of it went in the bucket. I'm sure not all of it did.
Yeah.
And then Sean Locke had to come on and just stand in the pee and do
he didn't like that.
Do
he'd
jokes.
Have, he'd have enjoyed that.
Yeah, but it was the late 90s. This was...
Yeah.
This
that was sounds like a very much like a late 80s. There was things when I started in the late 80s that were like that, like the Iceman. There was someone who did some kind of vulva-based...
There was a lady who shot paint out of her butthole onto canvases.
There was, yeah, there was that as well. That was a bit later.
Yeah. Though. It's tricky on that, because where do you go next year with the show? I mean, it'd be good if she honed the craft such that she moved away from abstract into quite specific things. So someone would be like, the Hay Wayne, and you would just fire out famous paintings. Would just come
well,
straight
she could
out.
Just do a very realistic picture of a poo. That would be quite good. Yeah. Just very...
Meta.
Yeah, made of poo as well.
Whoa, yeah. No.
No, that would be too far. Good. good. You've been in a film with Keith Allen, my friend Keith Allen. Which your brother, who I also know your brother from a long time ago, back in 97. Your brother was a stand-up before.
Yeah, my brother was really funny, yeah.
But so, he's a writer now, he did this film.
Yeah, he writes movies and he does bits and pieces of acting and the odd voiceover, that sort of thing. He was a brilliant stand-up. Dylan Moran always says my brother was his favourite stand-up. My brother was a sort of non sequiturs one-liner. In the 10 years he did stand-up, he never said hello or good evening to an audience. He would just open with, if you touch an electric fence on purpose, does it still count as a shock? Just straight in. He had about 40 of those perfect, perfect jokes. And he used to assemble stuff while he was on stage. That was his thing. He would assemble flat pack furniture, or he'd go to a secondhand shop and buy an old saxophone and just be putting it together the whole time and then just play one note at the end or whatever. But, I mean, this is... I realise that I came into a slightly... I was luckier than you would have been when you were starting. I said there wasn't much of an alternative scene then. So my brother was assembling things on stage at gigs in Newcastle where people were like, what the fuck is this? There wasn't really an alternative circuit. I mean, there was Lee and Herring, you know what I mean? But then there was just the circuit.
Yeah.
And so he used to take bad. He did a weekend in the Hyena where he was booed off once, did okay once, and got a standing ovation once.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, that's an away draw. Let's just leave it there. And yeah, he never did stand up again. Oh,
that's
then.
A shame. He was really good. But yeah, I mean, again, your jokes are. I was watching. There's a bit of you on the Live at the Apollo, and there's a few various bits. There's some the great thing from the Melbourne Festival. I mean, there's the music you do as well, but the actual jokes are very beautifully crafted. And again, it's similar to your brother's stuff, I think, in that way that you think no one else would think of that, but it's such a great observation. You know what I mean? So it is that. I'm a huge admiration for your ability to come up with that way of looking at the world.
I've got one proper joke in the new show,
okay.
But I don't mind putting it on the podcast because I love the podcast. It's that I say that Cher, the singer, is backstage, and she's married. She's recently got married to Ross Noble, the comedian, and that's why she just uses her first name. Because it'd be too bleak. It would be topical, but quite bleak, to be honest.
And so the new show is called Ultrasound?
Yeah, I didn't think... So the first joke I ever wrote when I was 12 was, who are the most decent people in the hospital? The ultrasound people. And they were hassling me for a title for this show at about Christmas. So I was like, I'll call it that. But I think the problem with it... So I like it in that it's seemingly profound, as in you imagine it's an ultrasound scan of maybe one's personality. But I think a lot of people think it's a story about how my girlfriend's pregnant or something.
Okay.
But no, it's absolutely not. It's just, I like the idea of talking is a sound, and it's a cool sound, a.k.a. an ultrasound.
Okay. And there was a great song, which I don't want to talk about too much. I'm sure it's based on a true story. There's a song from you did in Melbourne, which maybe is in the show, about the mouse problem you had.
Yeah.
Was that in the show?
Yeah, it's the plumber came. I'd had a mouse problem, and the plumber came about 9 months later because the taps were just at a low dripping point. And he just turned on the tap. He goes, do you have a mouse problem in this house? 9 months ago. And I was like, oh, holy shit, no. Oh, no. And so they, if you get Rentokil, they put down the bait that dehydrates them. So they go outside to search for water. But if they can't get outside, they smell the tank in the attic if you have an uncovered Victorian house. And they all, like this would be every flat in Edinburgh. And they all make their way up and dive into it and drown. And 9 months later, their bodies have dissolved. So they're just skeletons. And then the skeletons get sucked into the top of the pipe and slow down the... like. It's, yeah, and he's just like, it's incredibly common. So you've been drinking mouse juice for the last 9 months.
Not many people think of turning that into a song, though.
I mean, I saw a gap in the market. There's enough songs about love. There's a couple of football songs. There's one song about snooker.
When that happened, though, when the plumber said that, part of you must be, oh, my God, what is in my inside me? But also part of you must be thinking, this is going to be a good routine, or this is going to be good for comedy.
No, it was only in retrospect, because I've always been terrified of mice.
Right.
So when he told me, it was purest, darkest fear and loathing.
Yeah.
But then, in coming to terms with it and realizing that my own DNA is now over 90% mouse, that if I have managed to have an offspring at some point, they'll probably have a tail. It was around that. I don't think I'm as scared of mice anymore, because I know I've drunk over 1,000 of them.
it's up on YouTube if you don't get a chance to see the show, but do go and see David's show. Unfortunately, we're going to have to but you might, if you're in London, or if I come somewhere where you are, we must come and do a full...
Can I give a shout out to a man I once... My oven, I love fixing things, and I knew my oven wasn't dead. But the guy had come from the shop where I'd gotten, he goes, oh, yeah, I can't fix this. So I just put a thing on Facebook, and I said, can anyone fix an oven, like a proper engineer? And a man responded in a Facebook Messenger, and his main thing was, yeah, I love Richard Herring's podcast.
Okay.
You should do that sometime. His name was Dave, and I said, okay, I'll do it sometime. And he's like, then I'll fix your oven. So he came to his name is Dave Manners, which is a brilliant name.
That is a good name.
Sounds like a Mr. Manners.
Mr. Manners.
And He came, and I'm still baking away thanks to this podcast and that man.
Oh, good. I don't feel bad about not paying you now. ladies and gentlemen, please go and see the fantastic David O'Donoghue. We are back tomorrow with John Robbins and Snorlag Ludvigsdottir. So do come and see that. Please come and see these shows again. Thank you much, so very much for coming. Do come if you're at home. Thank you. Goodbye. I'm going to be at the front selling books. Bye. You have been listening to Rahulastapa at the Edinburgh Fringe with me, Richard Herring. Thank you to Pest for providing the music. Thank you to everyone at the Newtown Theatre and The Stand, and everyone at GoFasterStripe.com. The producer is James Hingley. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz at GoFasterStripe.com production. Go to Rahulastapa.co.uk to find out more. RichardHerring.com/gigs to find out who my guests are for the rest of the run.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.